your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
Hi everyone, welcome to Special Presentation with Mike and Ethan, or
Alf will not be seen tonight.
I mean, how many times have you asked someone what their favorite comic strip is and they go, Jane?
That has happened to me a total of never.
I mean, you really could have tried a lot harder to come up with a memorable name for your comic strip, something besides Jane.
But... yeah. Now keep in mind that this comic strip, Jane, was originally from the 1930s. So possibly there were fewer comic strips at that point. So you didn't really need to stand out for branding, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, the first comic strip was called Comic Strip.
Well, I got to watch that. I got to read that one. It's like it came out with like, it's like, I got to go read comic strip on my way to check out that new book, book two. that's a deep cut for you kids.
Yes.
It's a deep cut for us, I guess, actually.
It's
a joke for us. Sometimes we like to tell jokes for each other. It's not for you people listening. This is not for you. This is just for us.
Yeah. Like, you know, like Eddie Vedder said, this is not for you.
That's right. This is just Wendy's. It's like a Wendy's kid meal. It's just for us kids, not for you.
Sir, this is a Wendy's kids meal.
Oh, are we at the Supreme Court now? All right. Anyway, Jane is a British comic strip that ran from 1932 to 1959 by an artist named Norman Pett. And apparently it started because he made a bet that he could make a comic strip as popular with adults as the comic strip Pipsqueak and Wilfred was to children. And that means I assume that Pipsqueak and Wilfred was really popular with children at the time, though I've never heard of it.
Oh, apparently there's a series of silent cartoons based on Pipsqueak and Wilfred. So wow, coming up.
Well, my face is sure red. I guess we should have done some research before just talking about this. This is our usual thing. Like, what does Wikipedia say about this thing? Join us.
If you served in World War I, the three medals that were awarded for it, the Star, the British War Medal, and the British Victory Medal, were nicknamed a Pip, a Squeak, and a Wilfred.
Oh, after that comic?
Yes.
Well, I guess it was really big at the time. That's just how things go. I guess nothing lasts forever. I mean, because here in the States, we have other comics. We don't need Pip, Squeak, and Wilfred. And I don't think we need Jane either. But we do have our own versions of Jane, I guess you could say, because the basic premise of Jane is that Jane is a hot girl whose clothes fall off a lot.
Yes. Now, okay, I have my thought of what the American version of it this is. Let's see if they match. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking of, what is it, Little Orphan Fanny?
Oh, Little Annie Fanny? Is that
Little
it?
Annie Fanny, yes.
Hmm. When's that from? I don't actually know anything about that one.
Well, let me consult the tome here. Let me see. Little Annie Fanny was from 1962 to 1988, so it is a little later than Jane.
From Harvey Kurtzman, yes.
Yeah.
Now what I was thinking of was Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. Wonder Woman is also kind of a little spicy.
A little, you know, it's a little spicy, and also something regularly happens so frequently that you start to realize, oh, this is what the cartoonist is really into.
Yes. And that's the lasso, the truth lasso, isn't it?
Well, no, I was the part where Wonder Woman gets chained up all the time.
Oh, okay. I knew it was some sort of bondage type thing going on.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like that's the sort of thing that, like, yeah, if it happens a couple times, there's still plausible deniability, you know, with that. With Jane, I think the instant, like, clothes start falling off, it's like, well, yeah, come on. We know what this is about. But, you know, that's fine. Jane was a comic strip for adults who liked looking at ladies in their underwear because, you know, it was Britain, so they couldn't go further than that. So, you know, it's the old timey underwear, lots of garters, lots of stockings, that sort of thing. Lacy underall type shit, I think. They did try to bring it to America and it did not work. Apparently Americans did not like Jane. It was a little too spicy for them.
Yeah, there was a brief time when America was significantly more undersexed than England, which is quite a reverse from how in World War II the British, you know, grumpily referred to us as overpaid, oversexed, and over here.
Well, I guess they'd prefer to speak German then, wouldn't they? USA, USA.
But yeah, anyway. There was a time like in the late 1800s when I think the story was that some British fellow asked a woman if she had hurt her leg when she fell, and she blushed beet red and said, "We don't use that word in America."
Leg?
Yes. No, the proper word in America was limbs.
Huh. Wow. Okay. I guess isn't that why we started saying dark meat and white meat, so we didn't have to say leg and breast?
Yeah, pretty much. That's why. And that's why we have so many different words for a bull.
What?
Yeah, I mean bulls. You know, because it was possible to respond to somebody with bull, it became unacceptable to refer to the actual animal as a bull. Like my it was called a sire or a brute or the big animal is my favorite.
Oh, okay.
Or a he cow or a gentleman cow.
A gentleman cow. It's like, oh, I'm going to go visit the gentleman cow.
I'm expecting a gentleman cow.
What a world. Oh my God. Well,
the Far Side jokes write themselves.
I'm sure glad that as Americans, we got over that prudishness and now we're all very normal about sex. We were speaking of World War II, Jane apparently kind of had her heyday during World War II. And as such, she had a second thing she was known for besides losing her clothes, and that is fighting Nazis.
Yes.
So honestly, when you think about it, I'm like, both of these things sound pretty okay to me. I'm pretty okay with both of these things. I think it does remind me. I think if you're an American thinking about the vibe of Jane, I think the best way to think about describe it is, do you know those? I forget the name of the artist, but there's that artist from, I think, the 50s, whose whole thing was drawing like women with grocery bags and their panties fall off. You know
yeah,
what I'm talking
I think,
about?
Oh, Art Fromm. That's his name.
That's him. Yes. It's a very similar vibe. It's that thing where it's like, where the clothes fall off and then the woman like looks at the viewer and is like, oh no, how embarrassing. You know?
Yes. You know, this is something that every woman, you know, every woman who has OnlyFans account has to deal with is people, you know, who have not just a very specific fetish, but a very specific reaction you have to give. Like, okay, can you make yourself sneeze and then kind of look surprised that you sneezed?
Oh, is that a real thing? Because I believe
apparently so. Yeah.
I mean, that actually scans. I'm the surprise is interesting because I wonder where that originally comes from. If it's kind of a, you know, what do you call that? Like a an in June thing.
Ingenuity. I don't know how to pronounce that word.
Yeah. like the surprise at sneezing is kind of like, oh, it's cute because it's so naive, you know. It's like, look at this innocent girl. She's so innocent that sneezing surprises her. I assume that's
Mister, where'd that wind from my nose come from?
Yeah, like I kind of assume that's where it's from, because like honestly, the way when you say that, it's like I almost want to be like, that's so adorable. Like if a woman is like, if a woman was all like, oh, the wind came out of my nose, I'd be like, oh, you're so cute. That's so cute. That's so cute that I have to go and jerk off now. No, I'm joking. It wouldn't really do much for me that way, but like I get it. I think
don't use your magic pepper on me again. Oh,
wow, Ethan, you should start an OnlyFans. You're good at this.
Yeah. Hey, all you sneeze fans, you're welcome.
I was like, yeah, like, but that's kind of the same thing. It's that very, I mean, that's kind of, I feel like, what is the vibe of Jane? It's very, you know, it's got that girl next door kind of innocence, even though it's obviously for, you know, for making boners.
And I think, of course, we are very kink positive on special presentations. So that's Jake with us.
Yeah. Like, that's all fine. I mean, I don't, you know, obviously this sort of thing, it's, you know, it is sexist to some degree, but like, it's kind of also, I don't know. It's one of those things. It's like, well, yeah, but I get what's happening and it's kind of a goof. And I mean, it's one of those things where no one, I can't really get mad at it. And I feel like even, you know, the most strident, sex negative feminists would probably look at it and be like, yeah, whatever. I get it. I mean, whatever.
I do have a special fondness for ostensibly, you know, fetish material that is ostensibly meant to make you ejaculate, but that you could leave on your coffee table and your maiden aunt would flip through it and be like, oh, what's this? What a bunch of strange pictures. Well, they're probably nothing sex related.
That's true. That's true. I mean, that is also like, we are living in such a very weird world right now, because obviously, you know, the blue noses are all like, we need to ban all sex from, you know, but it's like, yeah, but are you going to ban everything all the pictures sex. Of yeah, are you banning all the pictures of like women sneezing now, all the pictures of people getting their cars stuck in snow, you know, how are you going to know? That's why it's always good to be a pervert, because you can get away with stuff then. People won't know that you're getting off if you're just looking at sneeze pictures. They would never guess.
As the laughing salesman said, you might even say that becoming a complete pervert just adds spice to life.
Wait, who's a laughing salesman?
It's this really awesome anime that's kind of like, the Twilight Zone. It's about these, you know, people having various problems in life, and then this weird looking salesman with a frozen smile shows up and sells them something that can solve their problem, but of course they always take it too far and end up undoing themselves.
Well, yeah, he's right though. So Jane, she loses clothes and fights Nazis. Good on her. I guess. I think she's probably like I think other strips of this nature, like Little Annie Fanny, who is also kind of an ingenue.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think the
ingenue. I think that's it. Ingenue.
Yeah. I think the girlish innocence is a big part of the allure of this kind of thing. Because it's a bit, you know, it's always like, oh, it's a bit naughty, but it's not like, you know, but it's not really like sordid, you know?
No. I mean, it's, you know, you're not supposed to be taking down your pants in the theater. You're just to be like, oh, I love her. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'm going to make my OCs do this.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say like, you know, a lot of the Jane stuff seems like, I mean, it's not entirely the same thing, but it's a little like Hilda, if you remember her.
Yeah. Yeah. Hilda.
Yeah, where it's like, oh, she's hot, but it's also just cute. But anyway, you know, but Jane was apparently so popular that she got her own movie. And that was a multiple movie. Multiple movies. That's right.
Yes.
Because there was a 1949 movie, The Adventures of Jane, which we did not watch, but that is from Jane's heyday. So, and that starred...
I bet a lot less of her clothes came off in that.
Probably. It looks like Christabel Lighton Porter played Jane in that one. And she was apparently a model for the World War, Second World War Daily Mirror newspaper cartoon heroine Jane. So she, wait, what? Heroine so she was Jane? Literally Jane.
Okay.
She was, okay. So, and apparently she, yeah, she was, she boosted the morale of the British during the Blitz, and Prime Minister Winston Churchill suggested that Jane was Britain's secret weapon.
Wow.
So, wow. Okay. So apparently, Christabel Jane Drury, let's see. She, her modeling career started when she left school, moved to London to live with her sister, earned a living posing for life classes. 1934, she married pilot Arthur Lighton Porter. Later, during her time as Jane, the fact that she was married became a closely guarded secret, as Lighton Porter believed her fans thought of her as their girlfriend and that she must always remain single in their eyes.
Oh, geez, that's what they do with idols in Japan now. Shoot.
Oh, wow. So apparently, yeah, Daily Mirror cartoonist Norman Pett, they've been drawing a weekly cartoon since 1932, which he called Jane's Journal, The Diary of a Bright Young Thing. His original model was his wife, but he replaced her with Christabel in 1940. 1944, when Jane first appeared nude in the cartoon, she's credited with inspiring the 36th Division to advance 6 miles into Burma.
So I don't know if seeing a nude woman in a cartoon would make me want to walk 6 miles into Burma.
Well, yeah, but Ethan, you're not British.
Yeah.
They had to sublimate all their horniness into like marching. Okay. So apparently, so there was a real life Jane. Says that, let's see, 1948, Pett's assistant Michael Hubbard took over the Jane cartoons. Christabel Lighton Porter began a music hall striptease act based on the Jane character, which toured army bases around the country. She won the title of Britain's Perfect Girl at the London Palladium and was signed up by a theatrical agent, Lou Grade, which led to her starring in the film The Adventures of Jane in 1949.
Lou Grade? The guy who produced The Muppet Show? Wow.
Wow. So, yeah, apparently there's a history here. So that is the real life Jane. She was Britain's most perfect girl. And, thanks to her, that's why we won the Second World War.
Yeah. She died on the 6th of December, 2000, aged 87. And now I'm just imagining something like, you know, something like Titanic, where they go back and find the original Jane and it flashes back to the adventures she had in World War II. That would be cool.
And it'd probably look a little like the movie we watched today.
Yeah, it probably would.
Because while
anyway, did we mention we watched a movie?
We did.
And see, while real life Jane Christabel Porton Leiter was inspiring England to defeat the Nazis, her fictional counterpart Jane was also fighting the Nazis, and she did that in the 1987 movie Jane in the Lost City, which did not star the original Jane Christabel Lighton Porter, but instead starred an actress named Kirsten Hughes. And if you look up Kirsten Hughes on Wikipedia, the thing she's most known for is playing Jane in Jane and the Lost City in 1987.
Yep. From 1995 to 2011, she was the partner of Sir Benjamin Slade and worked with him in making Monsell House, a neighboring Woodlands castle, into a successful wedding venue. After a 3-year affair, she, quote unquote, ran off with the handyman.
Well, good for her, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and she just died in 2022. Well,
oh, well, that's
she only lived to be 60. That's too bad.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Well, as a tribute to the second Jane, we're going to be discussing her most well-known movie, Jane and the Lost City. So this is a movie about Jane fighting the Nazis in Africa, as they look for a lost city that's full of diamonds, which they need in order to win the war.
Yeah. Who are they going to be fencing these diamonds to? Who wants to buy the diamonds more than Britain does?
That's a good question, especially
who is not already on Britain's side in the war.
They're going to sell the diamonds to the Germans because the Germans are also trying to get the diamonds. So obviously they want them. So they should sell the diamonds to the Germans to get the money so that they can continue doing the war against, you know, perfect
with
sense.
The war that they have already won because Germany bankrupted itself buying these diamonds.
Yes. I mean, that makes as much sense as anything because it is established when they find the diamonds, they speak to the diamond's rightful owner and ask to borrow them until the end of the war, which implies that somehow they will make money off these diamonds while not actually selling them and somehow be able to give them back to the original owners. But also they're British, so they're probably just lying about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know? You know, the British do tend to lie a lot when they're talking to the colonies. If you know what
no
I mean.
No truth, please. We're British.
Yes. So this movie, I gotta say, I was super on board with it at first.
Yeah.
And then it kept going.
I mean, it's. I don't think it's the worst thing we've ever watched by a long shot, honestly. But you know, it's. I think it thinks itself a lot more clever than it actually is.
Yeah. Like, I think the main issue is like, it's like, I was watching it at first and I was like, okay, I get what's happening. This is kind of fun. I'm on board for this. Jane is losing her clothes as she should all the time in the most absurd, ways.
Yes. My favorite was the first time when the stunned man being carried out on a stretcher flails his arm and grabs her entire outfit off.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, that's, I think, the best one because it's also the most unexpected.
Yeah.
It kind of becomes an issue at a certain point because they keep doing it. And, you know, while I kind of, I don't object to it. It's like, I feel like if you're going to keep doing it, it's like, okay, some of these feel like they should be paired with jokes, but they're not really. There's not much of a joke to it. It just happens. And then she just does stuff and then she's in clothes again. So she can get ripped out of them. And it's like, okay, I forgot. Cause I had assumed, here's the thing. It's like, I had assumed from Jane that like the hot part was that she's in her underwear. It's like, oh, I get to see a woman not in her clothes. Her clothes fell off. Now I get to see her underwear. But I
The hot part is ripping the clothes off. That action.
Yes. See, I didn't realize that at first. So I guess this is actually... Because I assumed this is made not for the discerning, you know, fetishist, but for the general pervert audience who just wants to see, like, boobies. But no, it's not. It's actually for the specific clothes ripping off fetishist market. So they do that a lot. And I was kind of like, by the end, I'm like, okay, look, I feel like even Jane doesn't seem to react much when it happens after a certain point. You know,
I was hoping that she would go to more lengths to prevent it from happening. And then it keeps happening. I was really hoping that there would be a moment, you know, the sort of take your best shot. I'm wearing 17 layers.
Yeah. Just like, you know, something. Also, though, she really does just kind of like start taking it in stride at a certain point. Cause I feel like she should have been like doing the like, oh no, my clothes are off. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Whoa. But like she, you know, the first time she kind of does, but after that,
the time.
Yeah. She just seems to be like, it just keeps happening, whatever. Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of that happening.
There's only one scene in this movie where she is, in fact, nude and she's taking a shower. You don't get to see her fully nude at all.
No,
I was hoping. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just see her through the shower curtain. And I was hoping that because this is happening while an assassin is creeping up on her, I was hoping that he would accidentally put some clothes on her.
That would actually be kind of clever. But no, we don't. I mean, this movie is not particularly clever, you know?
No, I think if this movie had been more clever, people would have been like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. Like,
you think you're better than me?
Yeah. Like, it's basically like, you know, this was made in 1987. So this was around the time Indiana Jones was coming out. And You know, this is also kind of you know, an homage or spoof of 1940s, you know, adventure serials, yeah. In the same way Indiana Jones is. The main problems with it, I think, is that, like, it's not a, you know, the jokes are not especially funny and it's not especially clever. But really what I think is the issue is it just goes on too long, you know, like,
and it's only an hour and a half.
It is, but yeah, like,
it's too long.
It is. It's because it's a very slight premise. And, you know, it's like, okay, look, by the end, I'm like, you have been attacked by, like, you know, restless natives like 5 times, you know, you should have like, it's like, come on, keep your powder dry. Like, save that for the big climax. You know, by that point, when they come out, I'm like, oh, there are more of these guys. All right, here we go. You know, so that's kind of the issue, is that, like, it felt like they didn't have enough material for an hour and a half. You know,
I wonder if it was a TV movie that got bumped up to theatrical.
I feel like it must have. I feel like it was, because it really feels like a TV movie to me. You know, it's because I noticed there's a lot of stock footage in this.
Yes.
You know, they film Africa in that incredibly, like, flat TV lighting. So everything just looks like Southern California. Yeah. You know, everything's just kind of like gray and beige and brambly. And it's like, oh, yeah,
it's very Hollywood Africa.
Yeah. It's like, you're really not, like, playing up the mystery of the Dark Continent in any way. You're just making it look kind of boring, honestly. But the biggest thing,
was there any part of Africa that was still under British rule in 1987?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
You know what? Maybe, knowing the Brits, I don't think they liked, they didn't want to give it all up. I don't think there was.
I don't have any way to identify whether or not this was filmed on location in Africa or not, but I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't. Also, like, did you notice there's almost no music in this movie? There's, like,
yeah,
no, it's weirdly silent. Like, there's no soundtrack. And that really makes it, I mean, it really starts to drag, I think, because of that. Because, you know, Indiana Jones, you got that, you know, and you're getting pumped. And this movie, it's like, there are whole fight scenes, and you're just like, okay, I feel like there should be some, like, action music happening, you know?
You know, there are a couple of places where they make specific references to other movies with music cues. And I feel like that's why it falls on its, that part falls on its face, because there's no music at any other point.
Yeah.
Because when you have the Jaws theme, and when you have the Psycho violins.
Yeah. It's, this is a very sparse movie. It was obviously made on a very low budget. So, which, you know, is unfortunate, because I feel like this movie, while it's not terrible, it definitely does not live up to the potential, because I feel like if you were like, okay, we're making like a kind of a spoof of, you know, Indiana Jones type movies, and we're going to make it a little saucy with some, you know, with this gal whose clothes fall off a lot. Like, I mean, come on, you could do a lot with this concept that would really be kind of fun and entertaining. And, And I think they just were like, they didn't bother to think much through. They were just like, okay, Africa, what are we going to see in Africa? Well, there's going to be natives, and there's going to be a volcano, and that's it.
But we couldn't afford a lion.
No, they couldn't afford a lion. They keep talking about lions, but, you know, the thing is, the movie does start out, I thought, pretty decently. Like, the first, you know, when Jane is still in London, and she's like, you know, kind of getting briefed by Winston Churchill, and there's this assassin that's trying to get her. Like, all of that is pretty, like, standard, like, you know, just slapstick comedy, but it's like, okay, you know, it works.
It has the running gag of her, you know, always losing her clothes, and all of these assassins that she ends up defeating without even trying.
Yes.
And they're, you know what this feels like to me? I feel like this might have been better with Muppets.
Well, everything is better with Muppets, but
that's true. But no, specifically, it reminded me of, do you ever see Dog City?
Yes, I have, actually.
Yeah, a lot of this reminded me of Dog City, actually.
I mean, I think that, like, if you were like, let's, if you made a Jane movie where Jane is like the only human and it's all Muppets otherwise, like, that's already like, yeah, you've pretty much bumped it up like, you know, three notches right there.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, no, that would definitely be better. Let's see. So let's talk about like who we got in this movie. We've got,
okay,
we got Jane. We talked about her. She's played by Kirsten Hughes, who is mostly known for this movie.
Yes.
We've also got another character from the comic strip, and that is the Colonel. The Colonel is, he's a British colonel. He is, if you think of a British military colonel, you'll think of this guy. Mm-hmm. It's that guy. You know what I mean? I don't know how it's that archetype, I guess.
That archetype with that voice.
Yes.
The voice that says quite right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's basically Graham Chapman doing that bit, you know?
Yeah, kind of.
And he's the colonel, and Jane's superior officer. I think in the comic strip, it seems like, according to the Wikipedia, he also has a wife in the comic strip who is demanding and suspicious. So I assume a lot of times she, like, there's comical misunderstandings where she catches, you know, the colonel with Jane and Jane's pants have fallen off or something.
Sort of the general Miss Buxley dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I'm assuming is going on with that. But we don't have any wife in this one because Jane and the colonel are going to Africa to find the lost city where the diamonds are so that they can use the diamonds to defeat the Nazis. but there's another dude with them, and that is Toombs. And,
Toombs, yes.
I'm not sure what Toombs is, but
he's the general's PA, or the colonel's personal assistant. He follows him around and, you know, basically does what the colonel asks before the colonel thinks of it.
Yes.
He is played by Graham Stark, who is, looks like he might be best known for being in the Pink Panther film series, and has been. He's been Inspector Clouseau's assistant and quite a few other things.
Okay, so that scans. He's that sort. He's another very classic British archetype, kind of a Jeeves type character.
Yes, a bowler-hatted businessman who always has his umbrella at the ready.
Yes, he looks like the sort of guy who should, in a certain point in the movie, bring the colonel like a telephone on a tray. You know?
Yes.
So that's Toombs. He's there as well. Then when they reach Africa, they meet this awful character, this guy, the worst, Jungle Jack Buck, played by Sam Jones,
whom we may be seeing in the future because he was also the title role in the 1980 Flash Gordon.
Yes. And if you've ever seen that, you'll know that he can't really act in that one either. his main thing is that he's a big hot Chad, you know?
Yeah. He kind of looks like a extra hunky version of, Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah, he does. I can see it. So he plays Jungle Jack Buck, which, first of all, I hate that name because it's like, okay, look, you gave him two first names. A character like this, you can call him Jack or you can call him Buck. Why are you calling him Jack Buck? That's stupid.
His first name is Jungle.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you even doing here, movie? He's just really, God, I just really hate this character. He really drags the movie down. Because it's like, I get that he's like the love interest. I'm not watching a movie because I want, you know, look, it's a movie about a girl who loses her clothes. Why is there a love interest in this? You know?
Yeah. Why doesn't he lose his clothes?
Yeah, and let me tell you something about this, okay? Now, I have not read the Jane comic strip, but I'm going to just go out there on a limb and say that if you're going to do, if I were to do a comic strip, right, about a lady who kept getting in situations where she lost her clothes, that what you do is she probably has a boyfriend who's like a real like schlub, like a real like goofy dork, right? So that you know,
Prince Valium, yeah.
Yeah, so the readers are like, oh, that's me. That's me. I'm that pathetic loser who's dating that hot girl who loses her clothes all the time. You won't draw like, oh, I'm going to draw a big real hunk in there, because the readers will be like, I can't identify with that. I don't know what's going on. So this is a complete misunderstanding, I believe, of what Jane should be about. Also, he's just really annoying. Oh my God, I just really don't like this character.
Yeah, he's this real kind of egomaniac, but
yeah,
and, you know, and there's one of my least favorite things in movies is when there's a big fate forced misunderstanding, and we get that in this.
Oh yeah, because like when they first meet him, like they won't tell him, you know, why they're there because they're on a secret mission, right?
Yeah,
and so they say that they're hunting, they're doing big game hunting, and he gets really mad. He's all like, how can you be doing big game hunting when there's a war on? You should be fighting. Oh, you're a bunch of cowards, and I can't stand cowards. I'm so mad. And it's like, okay, first of all, what are you doing? You're literally, you just yeah, said, like,
why are you here? Why aren't you a soldier?
Because he says in it, literally, he's like, yeah, I work. My dad has an airplane company, and he said I should go out and see the world. So he gave me a big fat check, and now I'm just came to Africa to bum around on my dad's dime. And it's like, you are a bigger piece of shit than like, you know, any of these other people. Come on. But also, it's funny because then they tell him like, oh, actually, we're here on the secret mission, and he's like, I don't believe you. You're lying. What is this? And it's like, okay, Jungle Jack Buck. Have you noticed how one of the people that you're talking to is literally a British military colonel? Like, why do you think he would be in Africa if he's not on some sort of military expedition? Like, what are you doing here?
Everyone's dad cuts them big checks to go to Africa, right?
Yeah, you know. I mean, God. I just really don't like this guy. He's just, like, annoying. He doesn't add anything to the movie. He's not funny. I mean, I guess he's there for, you know, I don't know. I guess the ladies or something. I guess
felt like they wanted him to be the main character because Jane has remarkably little to do in this movie.
Yeah, she's just there to lose her clothes. And yeah, she doesn't even really react much to it. Because I got to be honest, I don't think that Kirsten Hughes really has. I don't think she's got the screen presence for this role.
Mm-mm.
You know, I think she's
both literally and in the kind of metaphorical sense of, you know, just having a body that shocks you when it's revealed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with her. She looks, she's fine. She's there. She has a, you know, she's got a lovely body, but she is not so statuesque that like, if I saw her clothes fall off that, like, you know, my eyes would shoot out of my head, like a Tex Avery wolf, you know?
Right.
She's, you know. But you know, I mean, if I was writing this comic strip, you know, I would definitely be like, you know, Jane should be quite a bit thicker, you know, that's how I would do it. but yeah, I feel like she doesn't really, I don't know, maybe she does have that kind of stiff upper lip thing that British people do. So I guess that kind of works for this role, but like, I would prefer a character who does kind of exude a little more of that, you know, golly shucks.
Yeah, I would, you know, everyone here should be more of a comedian because it is a comedy, you know, everyone has a bit too much of a stiff upper lip, even the American.
That's true. Like no one really cuts loose that much in this. I guess the closest we get is, you know, the villain has a sidekick, right?
Okay. This is probably the best character in the movie, and even he's not great, but...
Yeah. So, let's first start. Our main villain is Lola Pagola, who is...
Not to be confused with Lola Granola from Bloom County.
Yeah, totally different character. Very different vibes. But Lola Pegola is another character from the comic strip, and she is basically the evil Nazi femme fatale that Jane fights. And, I mean, you know, this is... I don't think we need to describe her much. You can probably already picture what kind of character this is, you know? She is played by Maude Adams, who you probably mostly know as Octopussy from James Bond. Yes. And, you know, she's fine. Yeah. She's what you would expect that character to be. Kind of a, what would you call it? Kind of an ice queen, you know?
Yes. You know, there's a specific kind of, you know, Nazi supermodels or our superiors character.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know what TV Tropes would call this particular one, but you know, this, that Ilza She-Wolf of the SS type character.
Yeah,
but you know, that's basically what we got here. And
personally, I'm not attracted to Nazis. You know, you might be different, but
I mean, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I think Nazis are bad.
Yeah.
So, you know,
boy,
she's not...
this movie sure is a relic of a time when Nazis were considered, you know, stumblebums and doofuses.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, the 80s were a time when it's like, that's all in the past. You know, we're never going to have to worry about these clowns again. So, you know,
stop making movies about Hitler. You know, hasn't that poor man suffered enough? What did he ever do to you?
Yeah, well, you know, this is probably, you know, if you want bumbling Nazis, this is probably the most Nazis have ever bumbled outside of Hogan's Heroes. You know, now the main Nazi bumbler is actually, it's not one, it's not two, it's actually three different characters, all played by Jasper Carrot, who is a British comedian who was, you know, big in the 80s and 90s. I don't know that he's ever come over here to the States. I don't think he's a real much of a known entity here.
Yeah.
But I remember watching him as a kid. He had a lot of television specials on Sky One when I was living in Germany. And
so you know him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't recall him being, you know, funny or unfunny. I think he was a perfectly, I remember him being a perfectly decent comedian. Mostly what I remember about him is that he has a daughter named Nora. And I guess the joke is Nora Carrot, like gnaw a carrot.
Nora Carrot. Okay.
I guess maybe it's funnier in Britain. I don't. Yeah. And I do remember seeing one of his specials where before he came out on stage, the audience was singing, "There's only one Jasper Carrot. There's only one Jasper Carrot. There's all." I think there's, I'm not sure what song they were singing to the tune of, but they were singing that. So
how convenient when the audience sings your theme song for you. You don't have to pay anybody.
Yeah. You know, it was BBC. So, you know, but anyway, Jasper Carrot plays the bumbling sidekick to Lola Pegola. he plays three bumbling sidekicks who are all brothers. Hermann, Heinrich, and Hans, who keep dying in comical ways when they try to assassinate Jane. And yeah, I think he's fairly decent, you know.
He's kind of like a store brand version of Rick Mayall.
Yeah, yeah.
When he plays with his knife and makes these really weird expressions, I cracked up a few times.
Yeah.
There are some funny expressions in this and nothing else.
Yeah. He's definitely like play. He does. Cause, he does play it as kind of like, you know, like a psycho sadist, you know, he loves torturing. Yeah. He's, it's a sort of character that you would expect to be a Peter Lorre impression. If you know, but what I do like is the first time, because Heinrich is the main of the three and who hangs out with Lola. And Heinrich is all like, oh, my brother Hermann is going to, you know, kill. He's in England and he's going to fuck up Jane, get her out of the way. So Hermann is trying to assassinate Jane. And what I appreciate about this is Hermann has an eye patch, which is what is good. A good henchman in this sort of film should have an eye patch.
It's, yes.
You know, standard. And that was actually one of the things that I was getting really mad about when I went to see a movie called Argyle this weekend, which is basically a very, I was telling Ethan about this. It sucks. It's terrible. It's a really kind of shitty spoof of spy thrillers that seems to have been written by AI. But the thing is, in this movie, the main villain has a henchman who is in the movie for about 5 minutes. Because this movie's terrible. And I was watching this and being like, that henchman should have an eye patch. Why does the henchman not have an eye patch? Clearly, someone was not like paying attention. Someone was not doing their research because a henchman should have an eye patch. If you don't have an eye patch, at least have a hook hand or something, you know? Yeah. But no, nothing. So seeing that they gave this henchman an eye patch, I was like, okay, good. I'm glad someone on the people who made this movie know how this movie is sort of movie is made. This is what you do. Eye patch.
There should have been a scene where his eye patch gets ripped off and he's like, ah!
Actually, yeah, that would actually be really funny. But that would be too clever for this movie, actually. But anyway, so so Jasper Carrot plays all these guys who keep dying in comical ways when they attempt to assassinate Jane. And Jane just kind of, She's just kind of, you know, she's Teflon. She doesn't get assassinated. She's fine.
No. She gets into a bit of a scuffle with Lola Pergola at the end, but nothing special happens.
No. I do think part of the problem with this movie is that I feel Jane and Lola Pergola don't share a lot of screen time.
No. You know, and they never really meet until the very end. You don't have, you know, a big moment where Lola gets to say something like, once again, you see, there is nothing you can possess which I cannot take away.
Yeah. Like, I feel like they almost feel like they're in different movies, you know?
Yeah. Kind of like how in The Fifth Element, the hero and the villain never meet.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Well, that's a real... Well, yeah, yeah. So that's another reason this movie feels a little like, you know, a little sparse. We don't get any nice character interactions like you would hope for. You know, you'd hope that they have a nice big drawn out cat fight at the end where they tear each other's clothes off. But
yeah,
you
know, nobody's clothes came off during that fight, did it?
No.
Or did she already lost her clothes?
I can't even remember, honestly. I don't think.
Yeah, she loses her clothes so many times. It just lost all meaning.
I feel like, yeah, Lola Pergola stays very clothed throughout this movie, all things considered, you know?
She has a lot of interesting outfits that really look like they were planning action figures.
Yes. I think they were trying to kind of evoke a very specific archetype of the femme fatale, which is not, I don't believe this is a very kosher phrase anymore, but I'm going to say it. A kind of a dragon lady look, you know?
Yeah. Dragon lady, it's not super kosher. I think because it's supposed to evoke a Asian influence, but I don't think that she comes across that way. Most of the time she's wearing like this Egyptian outfit.
Mm. She does like Egyptian cigarettes. They do mention that specifically. So, But she doesn't get naked. I mean, not naked, but she doesn't get in her underwear, which makes me wonder if, like, you know, Maude Adams, like, had it written to her contract or something, because it's like, wait, you got this, like, this famous, like, Swedish supermodel to be in your movie about losing clothes and she doesn't lose clothes? Seems kind of weird. So, or who knows? Lola Pergola does have a couple other bumbling sidekicks. There's a Dr. Shell who is like a scientist that is hanging out with her. And then there's Carl, who is the bruiser. He's like the big tough guy, you know. Yes. And
played by Ian Roberts. And if you've seen a movie made in the past 30 years that takes place in Africa, he was probably in it. He is a South African icon who was in not just this, but also Tarzan and the Lost City, which is not a sequel.
Oh, is it the same Lost City?
I'm not sure. Well, I haven't seen Tarzan and the Lost City, but Yeah, he was also in well-known African movies like Cry the Beloved Country and I Dreamed of Africa and King Solomon's Mines.
Huh. So I guess, you know, he found his niche, which is movies about Africa.
Yeah. He speaks Afrikaans, so that's probably a major function for it. Yeah.
So the accent he had in this movie was not fake. That's probably his real voice.
Yes. Yeah, he kind of comes across as the African equivalent of Crocodile Dundee, but evil.
Yes. He's basically, he's the big, he's like, you know, in Indiana Jones, the really big guy that gets chopped up by the propeller blades. He's like that sort of character. He and Jasper Carrot have some they fight. They kind of bicker at each other throughout the movie. So that adds some interest.
He's kind of the equivalent of that guy from Batman who keeps going, infidel.
Yeah, yeah. he's in this movie, I guess. He's not I don't know. I feel like, when you have these sort of groups of bumbling villains where it's like, okay, we got the sexy, competent woman who bosses everyone around. You got the little Weasley guy. You got the big, tough guy. And you got the kind of the scientist. It's like, I feel like these guys should be a lot more entertaining than they really are in this film, you know?
Yeah. It feels like it was less that they were bumblers so much as it was just Jasper Carrot that was a bumbler.
Yeah. And they were like, okay, Jasper Carrot, you are going to be the load-bearing comedian of this film. And he tries his best. He tries his best. He's not bad or anything. It's just that he can't carry this movie on his own, you know?
No.
He needs help. And, and I feel like if they had cut out maybe, 45 minutes in the middle of this film, you know, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
I would definitely be a lot lighter on it. Another thing we should mention is this is a movie made in the 80s. It takes place in Africa. So, let's just say the 80s were not that long ago in the grand scheme of things, but in other ways, they're very long ago. And, The depictions we have of Africa are probably not the worst depictions of Africa from the 80s. Possibly not the worst.
I'm pretty sure Africa had buildings by 1942.
Yeah. This is basically, it's Africa, which is entirely desert, scrubland. Natives will come out with spears and attack you. There are not cities, they're trading outposts. They do go to a trading outpost. I think there's a name. I can't remember what they call it. Do they call it Abu Dhabi or something? I don't know.
Abu. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think that's a real African thing, but.
Well, you notice that this just takes place, not in, Namibia or whatever, but in Africa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The state of Africa.
You know, that country we all are familiar with, Africa. They do the thing where they do go to the trading outpost, which they do one of the things that I do like generally in movies take place in kind of in Africa, in this, they take place in this I don't know what you would call this sort of fictionalized Africa, this dark continent of.
Oh, that's what they call it. Yeah.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
That's what Churchill says to Jane is like, I'm sure you will brighten up the dark continent.
Oh, that's right. Cause he sees her clothes fall off and he's all like, oh, the lights may be out in London, but look at those headlights.
Boy, my breeches are stirring.
It'd be great if they just had a cigar just going whoop.
Maybe. Never before has one woman done so much for so few.
You'd be like, madam, I may be drunk now, but you have some capital knockers. but I'm trying to think, I don't know what you call this, this land of fable version of Africa. you know.
Well, I've said this before, but I always think of the, I think, what was it? I'm trying to remember which Mystery Science Theater movie it was where they swapped from the soundstage to the, stock footage. Well, swapped from the stock footage to the soundstage, and Crow goes, "Real Africa? Hollywood Africa!"
Yeah, we get some of that in this. But yeah, there's a lot of soundstage. There's a lot of, like, yeah, stock footage. But you know, when you do this sort of, like, you know, this trope of Africa, one thing I do like, it's a very standard thing to do in this, is like, oh, we're going to go to the outpost, right? And of course, in the outpost, you're going to go into a tavern that's like a big, the greatest hive of scum and villainy here in darkest Africa. And, you know, it's always going to be filled with, like, you know, like sweaty, like bounty hunters and shit, and guys that have like a monkey on their shoulder. You know what I mean?
Yeah, these were some extremely oily men.
Yes. So they do this. They have this thing up here. I feel like these oily guys aren't used to the fullest, because everybody's just standing around in wife beaters. And it's like, I'm sorry, yeah. The costuming department was like asleep on the job that day, because everyone should be like dressed. You know, there should be some guys in like colonial outfits and, you know, like some, you know, like guys dressed like they're like from the British Raj. There should be some like, you know, some, I don't know, like they should look like those dudes in Greystoke, you know, like, yeah, those syphilitic guys.
They should be playing up the fact that this doesn't take place in any specific part of Africa, and you should have a bunch of people in the different costumes from all over Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the fun of these sorts of scenes. So they didn't really do as much with that as I would have liked. But on the other hand, maybe that's good, because it would probably get, like, since from the 80s, it'd probably get extremely racist, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to their credit, I'm not sure if there was anyone who actually had, like, you know, something explicitly racist, like the bone in the nose or whatever, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, again, this is, by 80 standards, I think this was probably pretty benign. I did like the part where the Tombs is complaining about Africa to the colonel, and he's like, oh, it's unnatural. If white men were meant to come to Africa, they'd be born black. And I was like, that's kind of funny. I like the idea that's basically like, yeah, why don't you get out of it? That's a good thing. Get out of Africa, honky. What are you doing here? Stop colonizing.
I thought that was the point he was making, but, you know, if he just hates Africa, that's one thing. But, you know, if he has an issue, if he was quietly criticizing colonizers, then it's like, you know, what, man, we're meant to be traipsing all over Africa.
Yeah, it's a little, you know, it's a little unclear, but it's...
But on the other hand, I mean, that goes the other way. And I think it's fine for black people to go traipsing all around all the other continents.
So. Yeah. I mean,
not colonizing them in quite the same way.
Well, yeah, I think,
you know, I don't want anyone coming to my house and saying, I claim this house for Timbuktu.
Yeah, I think, you know, generally, I think we can agree that settler colonialism is bad. I don't think, you know, but, you know, people visiting other countries and learning about culture, cultural exchange, that's very good. You should do more of that. So, yeah. Anyway,
we do get some of that later. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So speaking of which, they do finally meet. They do actually arrive at the Lost City, which is
takes way too long.
It takes way too long. And honestly, I feel like this is a movie that would be more fun if we had a little more lore, kind of in the way that Indiana Jones does it, where they give you some, you know, they really tease up kind of the mystery of stuff. And this one is like, yeah, there's a lost city. It's in Africa. It's got diamonds. Okay.
Found it.
They do have that weird thing where they seem to mention it was built by like guys from India going to Africa, and that's never brought up again. And I thought they just were like, I was kind of like, oh, did you put that in because you're racist? And you're like, we don't think the audience will believe that Africans could build a lost city, so we have to explain it as like guys from India doing it. I don't know what that's about, but we do finally get to the lost city, and the person in charge of the Lost City is the Leopard Queen. And she is actually, I think she's probably one of the most entertaining characters in this movie, to be honest.
Yes. She's played by Elsa O'Toole, but I can't find anything else about Elsa O'Toole.
Yeah. So she is basically, she's, you know, she's called the Leopard Queen. So you can probably guess what, you know, her outfit is like. She's dressed like, you know, a Leopard Queen. Yes. But it turns out she is, she's from England. She went to school at Oxford and she's got a posh accent. And she only went back to Africa to run the Lost City because, you know, her she had to take over the family business, basically. And that's kind of amusing. I actually thought that was all kind of funny.
Yeah. This is, you know, something that absolutely did happen at the time, because, you know, although countries may be kind of racist in who they accept, schools generally weren't. So you did meet a lot of different kinds of people coming to, you know, Oxford or even Yale or whatever, and then, you know, returning to a city of 500.
Yeah. You know, you get a lot of like, foreign aristocrats, you know, we like those. So yeah, she wants to, so she has diamonds, but apparently she lost them. She doesn't know where they are. They're hidden in the city, which is odd, but
yeah,
she decides she's like, oh, I miss, because when I was in Oxford, I was in love with this guy, this Arab prince named Freddie, and I want to go back and see him again. So she says to the colonel, if you can find the diamonds, you can have them if you take me back to England. And it's like, well, which is weird, because it's like, I feel like if you've been to England and then you came back, do you not know how to get to England? Why can't you just, you could just go to England? Nothing's stopping you. So I don't know.
Yeah, if they said something like, well, the last volcano eruption took out our airstrip. That would be one thing.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's just that she forgot she liked England until these English people showed up and jogged her memory. which, you know.
I mean, same. I'm like that.
Yeah. I mean, fair. I do think it's very funny when, like, they've got them all tied up and like she comes down and she looks at Jane and she just immediately tears Jane's clothes off. It's like, why? What is that about?
Maybe she wanted them. She was like, oh, these look better on me than on you.
It is very funny. They figure out that if they move the statues around, it will, that they have in the Lost City, it'll open a secret passage and they can go in and find the diamonds. Which
and
they
then
do.
The door actually opens because Jane just happens to, you know, hit her hand on the side of a throne or something.
Yeah. You know, oh, that Jane, what a bumbler.
Scooby-Doo stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now at this point, yeah, we haven't mentioned Jane much at all because Jane is about as big a part of this movie as Howard the Duck is of his. She's just kind of a mascot.
Yeah. I mean, she's there to lose her clothes and, you know, that doesn't really move the plot along, even though it could have, you know.
Yeah, there could be a lot of things where like, well, how are we going to find them? Follow the trail of clothes.
Yeah, but no, they don't do a lot with that. Once they're in the room where their diamonds are hidden in a secret passage. And the Leopard Queen is basically like, oh, I think they're hidden here. I'll go look for them. And she's like, this is a great scene because the Leopard Queen is like, I bet the diamonds are around here somewhere. And they're just filming her like where she's just bent over for like about like what, 5 straight minutes. We're just looking at her ass, which is very amusing. I do like that this movie knows what it is, you know?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah, there are a lot of lingering ass shots. We got one at the very beginning.
Oh, that's right. Cause like Jane, what is she getting something out of a trash can and she's leaning over and basically her skirt is so short, you get to see her like underwear. That happens again after the Leopard Queen goes into the tunnel after the 5-minute ass shot, then Jane goes in as well. And we get another ass shot of her, except that the thing is the Leopard Queen was wearing like a loincloth, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, so here's the thing is like, so her ass was semi obscured, while we were getting the ass shot of her. So while I was watching it, I was like, I think this is an ass shot. I think it's an intentional ass shot because we're lingering on it for like 5 minutes, but her ass is obscured by this cloth she's wearing. So now I'm wondering if it's so then I was like, I second guessing myself, like, okay, is this actually just accidental and they didn't intend to shoot her ass like this? Because it seems like they really did. It wasn't until Jane did the exact same thing where she get to see her garters. I'm like, oh, okay, that was intentional. So good. Yeah. I'm glad it was intentional, because if it was accidental, it'd be like, what are you doing? But when it's intentional,
it's like, that a lot further though.
They could
have had them, you know, after that, you could have had them both get stuck side by side and, you know, just get a ass shot of both of their asses pumping up and down like pistons as they try to free themselves. You know,
I mean, honestly, yeah. Look, they could have pushed a lot more in this movie. And unfortunately,
then again, I wonder how much was left on the cutting room floor.
God. Yeah. Cause I think it, I don't know. I think, you know what I think it is that confused me up the Leopard Queen's ass shot is, first off, not only is her ass slightly obscured, but we've been watching this entire movie with no sexy bits of Lola Pagoda the whole movie. So the only person who's getting ass shots and anything sexy happening is Jane. So I just kind of assumed this movie didn't have any interest in any other woman other than Jane. So then when we get the Leopard Queen suddenly getting an ass shot, I'm like, oh, wait, this is a whole new paradigm. Now I don't know what to believe. So that was kind of
just... Oh, not only that, after the ass shot, after the first two ass shots, I'm looking at it now. Also, then we have a scene where after Jane goes down into the same tunnel, we just see her feet sticking out and wiggling like the creeping terror.
Yeah, that was a little strange. I almost was wondering if that was supposed to be hot, because
yeah,
they do, oh boy, linger feet on that.
Wiggly feet.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like maybe the director was like, that was his thing, so he's like, I'm putting something a little in for myself. We've had all this, like, all these panty shots for you guys at home, but like, now this is a little treat for me. You know, Quentin Tarantino was on set. Yeah, but then they find the diamonds, right? And then...
Yeah, they're sitting in there in a big Zelda treasure chest, which is funny because this whole set looks like a big Zelda dungeon.
Yeah, it's very Treasures of the Hidden Temple type, you know.
Yeah.
But I think they get the diamonds and then they're leaving Africa. Or did the Nazis get the diamonds? Who gets the diamonds? I can't remember.
No, the Nazis got away with the diamonds. And meanwhile, they found a secret exit out of the tomb that the Nazis locked them in. And they just sort of emerge in a big thicket of grass just in time to meet yet another group of unfriendly natives. Or are they?
Oh, that's right. Because Freddy shows up. He just shows up. And Leopard Queen's like, oh, it's Freddy. I love you. And she just gets on his horse and they leave. And it's like,
yeah,
okay.
So you're not going to be in the sequel then?
Yeah, it was just like, we need to, like, oh, we tired this character. Let's get rid of her. And it was like, really? Okay.
Come on.
I don't get it. Cause again, I thought she was, you know, the best character in the whole film, but you know,
I don't feel like this. Okay. Looking at this, I'm like, yeah, this was shot in like Southern California or something.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This was not a movie where they had much of a budget. So it's like, mm-mm. You know, I'm surprised we don't see Vasquez Rocks, honestly. It's so cheap. they do get on a plane. Then they fight the Nazis and they win. They beat the Nazis and they
beat the Nazis with the power of a dachshund.
That's right. Oh, we forgot to mention that Jane has a dog. She is a dachshund.
Yeah, the dog is it's a very good dog. He's inobtrusive for most of the movie. You know, he only shows up. They only remember he exists when he can solve a problem for them.
Yes.
So
he's like,
that turns out that is what Carl, the big mean bruiser, that's his weakness, is that he's afraid of little nippy dogs.
Yeah. I feel like that should have been established earlier, honestly.
Yes.
But they defeat the Nazis and then they get the diamonds for the war effort. And
presumably winning the war.
Yes. We have like a little Casablanca riff at the end because Jungle Jack and Jane kind of have to say their goodbyes, you know, very, very, Casablanca-ish.
At a club that is actually called the Casablanca.
Yeah. Shouldn't it be called Cafe American? I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's shouldn't it be called, you know, White House in Afrikaans or something?
Yeah, man. I don't know. They missed opportunities. But as then, like, as Jungle Jack is getting on the plane, but it turns out, like, oh, because he's going to help the war now, I think, right?
Yeah.
But
I guess he was like, well, maybe I'll stop, you know, bumming around Africa for no reason.
Yeah. You know, actually do something with his life. But Lola Pagoda is on the plane, too. But he gets on the plane. Anyway, that's the end of the movie. So I don't know. I guess she kills him or something on the plane.
Oh. Oh, no. It was filled in Meridius. So where's it that? Was. Or Marish. How do you pronounce that?
Oh, that. So it was filmed in Africa.
Yeah. Okay. So it is in Africa. I'm wrong. Okay. I apologize. Wow. I guess Mauritius. How the fuck do you pronounce that?
Don't ask me. Wow. Okay. Well, so that's Jane and the Lost City. I wish it was better.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you can see that there was in fact some, you know, some real, do you agree with me that it would have been better if they had either decided to commit to the action or commit to the comedy?
Yeah, I think so. It's a little bit trying to be both, and it doesn't really, they kind of get in the way of each other.
Yeah, I think the part with the spear trap really shows that.
Oh, yeah, what a terrible trap. That doesn't work at all.
It missed every single time. They set up these spears to fall on Jungle Jimmy, you know, when a candle burned through the rope, and they all just missed him.
Yeah. Because Jasper Carrot is like, I'm going to do, instead of killing you, I'm going to put you in a trap and this will drop spears on you very slowly. And it's like, all right. This is not, it's really not that, there's not a lot of tension in that. I really think, like,
it could have been funnier or it could have been more exciting.
Yeah. I mean, really, I think, like, this had a lot of potential and it really just was, I think, an issue with, like, the script should have been a little bit tighter, you know, instead of an hour and a half, and a little bit of a budget would have helped, you know? But it's, you know, it's close to being decent. It's close to being decent. But, you know,
I can see this as something that kids at a daycare would love.
Yeah. Yeah. If you were going to show
watch
kids
over and over.
Yeah. Kids would definitely enjoy this because there's comedy, there's action, there's clothes falling off.
Yes. You know, and the clothes falling off is so not played for eroticism that kids would just be like, oh, that's funny. She lost her clothes again.
Yeah. Kids couldn't get enough of that sort of thing.
And so then they'd be like, wait a minute. Corncob pipe.
Oh, it's like, it's so nice to see the next generation picking up the mantle, you know? Well, you know, I have to say that you can see why Jane was like such a phenomenon in the day because, you know, back in the day, the Brits were living in a time when they were fighting Nazis and they loved seeing clothes fall off. So this gave you both of those things, which actually makes me think maybe they should bring back Jane for the modern world. Maybe it's time because, again, we're fighting Nazis now and people still like clothes falling off. So why don't they bring back Jane or just do some, I mean, I think, actually, I think that'd be a new idea. There we go. We're going to have the new Nazi fighting engine in June
June in Mauritania.
Yeah. You know, who's, you know,
So what I'm imagining is, you know, Richard Spencer getting punched in the face in the middle of his interview. And then the person who punched him runs away, but all their clothes get ripped off. And then you have this nearly naked woman running down the street.
Yeah.
People would love that.
Yeah. There you go. Yes, exactly. It'll be Little Orphan Antifa.